So welcome to Inside Investing. We have Jason Voss of the CFA Institute and Kurt Van Kohler of Mitsubishi UFJ here, and we're talking about municipal bonds. Kurt Van Kohler, my New York Muni Income Fund is down 10% in the last month. What's going on?
Well, sorry to hear that, but there's been an extremely sharp correction in the municipal bond market recently, and it is historic, actually. The bond buyer municipal index experienced the sharpest three-day decline between June 23rd over the weekend to the following Monday, June 27th, since 1987. And, actually over 5 days, it was the sharpest correction since the creation of the index back in 1984. And, the index, which is a simple average of 40 bonds, dropped 13 points, in dollar price. And the percentage price decline was similar to what you experienced. It was about 10.7%, which is the largest since October 2008, when we had, the financial crisis affecting the markets. So, there has been a bit of a rebound since then, and the market has seemingly, quieted a bit. But we're talking about the impact of primarily, Bernanke's comments about tapering the Fed's purchases and how it affected the fixed income markets, including munis, and perhaps, some impact from the Detroit news, too.
Okay.
Kurt, do you mind if I ask you a question about that? To what degree are those losses amplified by the liquidity problems in the municipal market, or is this index made up of fairly liquid securities?
The index, which is actually constructed of what's purported to be the most liquid bonds over the last month or so. So I don't think that any illiquidity of any more obscure or illiquid municipal bonds would have been factored into that. It could have amplified it in people's portfolios if indeed they had some of the many illiquid municipals.
So it's possible that people did much worse than the index, is what you're saying?
Could have done worse, could have done better. Yeah. Because the municipal market is not monolithic. There are 20,000 different rated issuers, and so complete range of maturities and ratings. So, sure, but this is just a benchmark we're talking about for reference. But it is indicative of high grade liquid bonds.
Okay, but for with this kind of sell off in a market that's really not supposed to sell off, at least in the way that most people understand it. There must be conversation about a bear market in munis. Is that something that seems credible to you, or?
Well, first of all, this market will react like any other fixed income market. What is supposed to be more stable is the credits. It's supposed to be, according to the common vernacular, the second most creditworthy market after Treasuries. That perception has been tested over the last few years for a number of reasons. But in terms of what happened just over the last 2 weeks, that was interest rate shock.
Okay, so more a function of markets and pricing than the actual probability that the bonds would
default. Oh yeah, municipals are exempt on their coupon interest, but not immune from capital losses, and on capital gains you have to pay tax.
So can you go into some of the credit risk elements of that, and just sort of I wonder. We've heard the word bankruptcy talked about with munis. Some well-known analysts are talking about a wave of bankruptcies, or have been talking about them for many years. What does that mean in this market?
Well, we should sharply distinguish first between bankruptcy and default, because they're two different things. And one can happen without the other, and have. Bankruptcy is a last resort. In municipals, it's Chapter 9 is the federal code that is used. It's only for local governments. States are not eligible. There's an important point to make is that the estate credit sector is the most stable in munis, and there hasn't been a wave of state defaults since after the Civil War, when actually there was debt repudiation, with the sole exception of during the 1930s when Arkansas defaulted but promptly cured its debt. So these states have impeccable default rates, basically zero for over a century. And local governments have recourse to Chapter 9 generally if their states allow it. So we have sort of a patchwork system. About 21 states do not provide automatic authorization or approval for local governments to go into bankruptcy if they need it. And of the others, I mean, usually there's tests involved that the local governments may or may not make. You know, the Chapter 9 was only created during the Great Depression in 1937. And so the history of what's transpired in it, you know, only goes back to 1937. And there's only been over 600 filings cumulative since then. And of that, less than half have been since 1980. And the vast majority of all those filings were small special districts, usually in undeveloped areas. So really you've had 49 approximately going into the last year that were actually a city, a community, a county, cumulative. And then all of a sudden we had a handful occur.
Mm-hmm. And so that was our wave.
That's the wave. If you call that a wave, it's more of a ripple that rolled across a lake.
Okay.
That was tranquil.
So let's talk about a couple of these situations in particular, like perhaps Central Falls, Rhode Island, and walk back to that, or Stockton, California, where that has been in conversation for a while. I mean, how have these situations resolved, if they have?
The first one really was probably Vallejo to mention in the latest mini wave. That was back in 2008. It took about 3 years for the city to come out of it. The Central Falls is a small community of about 19,000 people in Rhode Island, and they went through bankruptcy in a very speedy 13 months. They're already out of it, got upgraded back to investment grade, I believe, and they never defaulted on the bonds. Vallejo did, and what you find is that each case is very different, and because of the rarity still of Chapter 9s, the danger of a lot of new precedents being set. So a lot of it's uncharted waters when you talk about Chapter 9. I mean, Stockton, which declared bankruptcy in 2012, and San Bernardino, the city in California, are taking very different paths. Stockton is the largest U.S. city to ever go into Chapter 9. It has 300,000 population.
Okay.
Now, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the capital, attempted to go into bankruptcy, but the state opposed it, and the court threw it out. Similar to like Bridgeport back in 1991 in Connecticut, they tried to go into bankruptcy, got thrown out. So the first thing that is that the first barrier to Chapter 9 is that a city can declare itself desirous or file in an effort to go into the Chapter 9. But it has to prove that it makes the grade, that it's eligible. And not all of them do.
Okay.
So, Kurt, are we hearing about these bankruptcies now because the media has focused its attention on that? Or is this par for the course? How cautious should we be?
It's a whole new market because the wrappers, the largely retail investor base of municipals, came to become accustomed of depending on in the form of bond insurance. Is largely gone because of the financial crisis of 08 and 09, and the fact that these bond insurance companies, well, they're mainly still around, but their enhanced ratings are worthless in terms of adding value to munis. And so back in the 80s and 90s and later, 40-50% of the municipal market, all the new issues that came out were insured. And the ones that weren't were the usually didn't need it because they were AA and AAA. So the market came to think of the credits as commodities and not appreciate the subtleties and the downgrade risks that truly always existed. But now they're exposed. And just the last couple of years, as we went into the largest recession of the 11 downturns that have happened since World War II. So the combined effect has meant that investors need to be cognizant of the credits as much as possible and to not take them for granted as if they're commodities.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you were first here in 2010, you said this is not a plain vanilla market, and it sounds like that's still true. I mean, there's not.
That's right. It's also a market which is the most retail-oriented in terms of its investor base of any fixed income market. And so it's possible that it shows signs of being a little more volatile, a little more driven by sentiment.
Okay. I wonder, shifting gears just a little bit, I wonder if I can ask you to react to a statement that Mr. Orr in Detroit made, where he was talking about the bondholder rights. He said, if you lent money to an insolvent city that has been going insolvent as openly and notoriously as possible since 2000, and you don't have a security interest, then you are an unsecured creditor. That seems to be unwinding something legal. Is that your interpretation of it?
Well, this is very interesting statement, and one that is indeed worth pondering a while, because it is introducing a type of view that has been alien to conventional wisdom that most of the market has long had. You know, Mr. Orr is a bankruptcy attorney, and he was chosen by the state after. It's true, a long period of distress. I mean, Detroit, one thing I will say before I get into the rights and what's new about his statement is that the credit issues of Detroit, before it proceeded into, the current default, has been long been telegraphed. I mean, Detroit lost over a quarter of its population since the 2000 census. It's an acceleration of population loss. The unemployment rate, has been 17% to 18% still over the last year, and in a sense, there's a depopulation of the city and a collapse of the economic base. So that much is we know is that anybody going into that credit should have been well aware of great distress and the efforts by the state, which has given it money over the last few years, and banks to try and prop it up. But the one thing that is a little different and still surprising is that the proposal and the suddenness of it in terms of the default, shortly after Mr. Orr was appointed, only in, I think, around March, was to undermine the traditional faith that investors have in general obligation bonds. Basically, he wants the bondholders to take 17 cents on the dollar, and that's his opening proposal. He's not sharing the burden proportionally of putting the city's budget on a more stronger foundation by raising taxes anymore. He says we can't do it, and by other types of budget cuts. So he's basically putting a disproportionate amount of the burden on bondholders. And I don't see why they would take that. That's why we expect a bankruptcy to occur, because the bondholders really have nothing to lose.
Gotcha, by staying around.
Well, 17 cents on the dollar would be pretty much the worst treatment ever experienced by far for a GO bondholder in a Chapter 9.
Okay. Yeah, that's an extraordinarily low recovery rate. It's typical low recovery rates in bankruptcy are between 35 and 60, depending on the assets sold.
Right. And, so he's declared a moratorium on debt payments. This is indeed one of the largest defaults in municipal bond market history. It's not as large as New York. It's not as large as Jefferson County or even the Orange County bankruptcies or situations. But, in fact, even Cleveland was, a bigger city to default back around 1994. And, of course, aside from defaults and bankruptcies, we had some very close misses with Philadelphia, which had a true fiscal crisis back in 1991, but was basically they found a resolution. What we don't have is a plan here to really resolve Detroit's problems other than haircutting the bondholders. We don't see a recovery plan for the economy.
How much is it of an overhang on the entire municipal bond market are these types of issues, the Detroit issue, the Harrisburg issue, the municipality down in Alabama, et cetera?
Well, Jefferson County, and it's interesting because the Birmingham, the city, still remains a double A, and that's the location of Jefferson County is where the capital is. Well, these are, it's more the precedents that are alarming and disturbing than the actual percentage of defaults. I mean, according to some data I just saw a day or so ago from Municipal Market Advisors, reputable outfit. They said that there's $16 billion of municipal bonds outstanding that are in default, in payment default. And the market, of course, is almost $4 trillion okay. outstanding. So it is a tiny percentage of in terms of actual defaults.
But certainly something that's on the minds of most municipal portfolio managers and bond buyers.
Right. In fact, in the first half of 2013, they went on to say that $7.6 billion defaulted. So a lot of those, without that number, has recently occurred.
So I wonder, if you could also comment on Illinois. I saw that they got downgraded, and right after that they did an offer for 17% higher, or paying 17% more in interest than the offering immediately beforehand. Are we entering into a market where, if you get downgraded, you should expect to suffer a penalty rate almost immediately, or is that the way that it's been forever?
Well, they actually did. Yeah, they did a little worse than the last sale, Illinois. But, they've had five downgrades in the last 4 years from Moody's alone, including one just last month. And so they're the lowest rated state, the A3, A- negative. So the bonds they sold about a week ago had for 25 years out, had a 568 interest rate, and that's, of course, federally tax-free. So that was 160 over the AAA municipal yield curve. That's the spread, about 160. That's equivalent to sort of a triple B type of credit, typically. I think they've been fairly consistently getting hit with a much larger spread. It was enough to bring in a lot of buyers. They were over six times oversubscribed.
Hmm.
So they had no trouble at those levels accessing the market.
Okay. So it's the kind of thing where you can always borrow as a municipality at a price, it sounds like.
Well, people don't believe that Illinois is going to default.
Okay. And so, I guess we can shift to sort of more the nature of the market sort of conversation, where we talk about whether this is, I think we've been hinting at this, but it seems like we're not really seeing widespread chaos, but rather sort of a natural outgrowth of a heterogeneous market.
Well, it seems that, you always hear every case that comes up is unique and different, and anomalies and not indicative of a widespread distress. But there are certain themes and commonalities that we do see. We see certain states that seem to have more of a concentration of weak local governments. If it's California, if it's Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Michigan, there's more distress. A lot of these communities, though, are so small that the amount of debt we're talking about is minor, and people can work in the municipal bond market for decades and never see a bond from some of these small towns. So, So in other words, it makes the headlines, but it doesn't really affect a lot of people's portfolios. And then another factor that is also muting the impact is bond insurance, even though it might be from a triple B company today instead of what was originally a triple A company, it's still paying off largely if it's AMBAC or MBIA and other firms. And so some of these entities that are in bankruptcy or in default, like the California cities I mentioned and Detroit, all or most of their debt is all bond insured and is still paying because of the bond insurance to the holder.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So it sounds like investor experience may not be as bad as the headline.
Well, maybe not. But, you have what appears to be the emergence of selective defaulting with a higher degree of defaults going to the insured bonds. In other words, leaning on the insurance companies. You're also seeing selective defaults due to the nature of the lien, the pledge. And we've had to now really open up the whole lid on what we consider to be a GO pledge, because they're not all the same. And there's a lot of other types of obligations that municipalities have been issuing now for a long time that the investors really have to be more aware of. For example, in California, they issued pension bonds, which are backed only by appropriations and not by the GO pledge. Those are the ones the issuers want to default on.
Okay.
There's states like New York and New Jersey where 80-85% of all the debt that they've issued directly is no longer a GO bond. It's appropriation-backed debt.
Okay.
And so they need to keep paying in order, because they rely on these mechanisms, but it's not your grandfather's municipal bond market.
So is it accurate to characterize that? Is that the sort of the actual legal nature of the pledge has changed under investors' feet? Is that what's
happening? Well, very gradually.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of complexity in the municipal bond market. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of creativity in some of the security pledges. And there's a lot of things that may have been around for a long time, but nobody looked under the rocks. For example, you take Jefferson County, Alabama. They issued things called warrants. Well, as it turns out, warrants are not GO bonds. People sold them indiscriminately as GO bonds. And then you have the notion Kevin Orr in Detroit put out, said GO bonds are just unsecured debt. They should be treated with other type of unsecured creditors. No preference, no recourse to raising the property tax. Now, a GO bond is usually sold with the thinking that it's backed by the property taxing power, by ad valorem taxes. And that if they need to, they're gonna have to raise taxes. That's why how many retail brokers have you heard when you're considering different bonds tell you that you've got unlimited property taxing power behind these bonds. Well, you have to question the willingness to use that.
So this raises another issue. Who's the backstop or the bulwark against this kind of covenant creep? Is it the analyst community? Is it the individual investor? Is it the credit ratings agencies? Who's the bulwark for the individual investor here?
Well, it's like this. When you were, years ago, people took for granted that they were going to buy utility or AT&T, or a steel company. Many people did it without, or General Motors. I mean, they did it without worry. Now you need to be, with municipal bonds, a little more aware of the fact that there are certain risks. I mean, they're generally high grade. I think that you can resort to mutual funds to do professional selection. That's one way. Or you can try and develop some rules of thumb. I think in these days, with the prospects for more volatility in the market in the months and years ahead, with bias towards rising rates, there's going to be probably some more flights to quality, and it pays to stick to more state or state-oriented type credits. It could be state authorities, bigger names, more liquid names.
But it's I mean, if we're talking about rising rates, I mean, even if I buy the best credit in the world, but it's still a bond, right? So I mean, is there a way?
Well, you obviously. The advice in terms of protecting its interest rates, one would receive from municipals is not much different in many cases. I mean, you want to go short, you want to go to liquid names. That's very important in munis. Liquidity is much different in the municipal market because the great abundance of names. But you'd also, I think, consider some sinking fund bonds or some. I like the, actually something. I like housing bonds because, see, they usually perform better, in a flat and rising interest rate environment. And I would try and go for, not high yield, but, certain callable deals that are no longer going to be in the money, but, giving you extra yield, because your total return is going to be mainly coupon income going mm-hmm. forward. Obviously going short, but I would go for pro-cyclical type of sectors if indeed you think the economy is going to continue to chug along a bit. I mean, I like transportation. I like some of the bonds secured by, sales taxes, even income taxes. Some of the public power, public utility, credits I like better than the local GO bonds. Notwithstanding the fact that, real estate values are rebounding. There's still a lot of stress at many of the local government levels. States are like too, but
this is the return spectrum and the risk right. spectrum. We've already hit on interest rate risk. We've hit on credit risk quite a bit. What about what I perceive as a big risk in the muni bond market with 20,000 issues, many of them very very thinly traded? What about liquidity risk?
Yeah.
And then some of these risks we talked about, in particular interest rate risk, is mitigated if you hold till maturity.
Yeah.
So what about refinancing risk, or is that actually something not to worry about in a rising rate environment because you can
right.
reinvest those proceeds at a higher rate? So I wonder if you could take that liquidity risk, interest, and refi risk in turn.
Well, there's something to be careful of with the munis, and that's the fact that other than the housing area where you have, you're gonna have bonds that are gonna not be eligible for refinancing if rates go much higher. Recent issues, if they become discounts, I mean, they're going to be subject to something called the greater extension, because most of the market now are premium bonds. They've been issued more than a couple of years ago, and the price to the optional call dates, which are usually 10 years out in the municipal market. So unlike treasuries, which are largely non-callable, if rates continue to go up and these bonds all of a sudden flip to becoming discounts and pass through par, there's a double whammy with rising rates, because they revert to being priced to their long-dated maturity. And so usually there's like an extra drop of a point or more as they pass through par. And then there's another factor called the de minimis rules with taxation. If they become deeper discounts, and the exact borderline, it depends on each bond, depends on its maturity. There's something where if you buy discount bonds, you may have to pay an accreted capital gains tax if they're deep discounts, and so I'd be wary of that. And because if you're holding them and they fall into what's known as de minimis territory, there's an extra drop there. So in other words, there's a couple of pitfalls, as rates start to go, there's a couple of factors that might kick them down a little more at a couple of points.
So it sounds like if I'm a total return investor and I'm thinking with a long-term time horizon, I may want to consider,
All the sophisticated or institutional bonds are well aware of these factors, and so you want to be careful that you don't run afoul of some of these things and ask your advisor about de minimis or the optional call extension. But you try and go for higher coupons and shorter, let's say 5-year and in maturities, but you're going to give up a lot of yield. Unless, as you said, if you can hold to maturity, and not worry about it.
Well, and just so that we're clear, what is a round lot in the municipal market?
100,000 usually.
100,000 is that sort of the minimum that I would want to put into one bond if I was looking at buying them myself.
Well, for a little better pricing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, even that, you have to shop around a little bit, because I think the inventory is going to become less and less at the broker dealers, so you're probably going to get to offer different bonds at different places. The new issues are usually very heavily dominated by the lead underwriter in terms of the distribution. The bid-ask spreads are not standardized and not always easy to find, so it pays to shop around. New issues are generally a better bargain, though.
Really?
Yeah, for the buyer, if you can get them.
So
they're going to be down though again too, because if the if interest rates keep rising, refundings might start to decline.
So of course the one big thing that we haven't talked about much yet with munis is their tax, their tax preferred interest treatment, and I hear that there's a chance that that's going away. Is that something that's likely in your view?
Not right away. I think that municipals have had tax exemption on their coupon income, since the creation of the income tax. And it's actually part of a reciprocal arrangement, because most of the states, would not tax treasury bonds either. The Obama administration for the last couple of years has been proposing to tax a portion of the interest, and it is described as one of the most aggressive encroachments on the sacrosanct tax exemption, but it is recognized that the federal government does indeed have the right, if they wanted to impose taxation. So they would limit municipal bond interest exemption to 28%.
Okay.
At times they've proposed to just do that for the highest income brackets. Other times maybe not. It's unclear if this will pass. And I think the greatest risk of this happening would be in conjunction with some major tax reform overhaul that would do a lot of other major, if not drastic, changes to the tax code. And this type of change might be greatly overshadowed by some of the other proposals that have been floated for homes and real estate and flat tax and all sorts of other deductions. So it's on the list, but it's not really, I think, singled out.
Would you consider that to be a political non-starter? I mean, it seems in an evenly divided Congress, there, it'd be probably a difficult thing to get that one through.
Well, it seems
would you
like
agree?
It would be. It would be, and especially with in recent months, with talk that the federal deficit has, at least in the interim, receded a bit due to the better tax collections. It seems that some of the threat of that has receded, but I wouldn't say it's completely gone. I think it's this continual talk of the need to, you know, make some tax reform. I don't think the dynamics are right for it now. So I wouldn't necessarily worry about it if I was an investor. Again, the threat is to clip a part of your tax exemption.
Okay. So the whole thing doesn't seem to be in play? The whole tax
exemption? No, that's not in play at all.
Okay.
No.
So it's a limitation factor.
Right.
Although, Jason, you and I were talking earlier about how this might not be the worst thing in the world for the muni market to have this...
Well, I mean, maybe. I mean, it's. I think we're a long way off, but what you're referring to is, it looks like to me, and Kurt, I'd love to get your opinion on this, one of the things about the muni market that's somewhat underappreciated, I think, is that it could be a good candidate for securitization. Nobody's ever come in and tried to create asset-backed securities using munis in the same way they do mortgages, but munis share many of the same characteristics as mortgages. Oftentimes they're secured by a hard asset. They pay a regular stream of income based on that hard asset.
There has been some talk of that over the years, but there's been some constraints with the tax code. They would need to create a different type of conduit.
Right.
There's been efforts that really didn't get that far to do some sort of conduits with, but again, the transference of the tax exemption, you know, passing it through has been problematical.
Yeah, that's why this is in the context of that tax exemption going away, because only with that going away would that sort of a thing be possible, because all of the jurisdictional issues would be enormous.
Well, the other thing, of course, is the rise of taxable munis.
Yep.
Because the Obama administration for a couple of years had a program called Build America Bonds.
BABs, yeah.
BABs, which were subsidized as to their interest rate. And so it gave a tremendous incentive. And again, we had a proposal for something called America Fast Forward Bonds. It just basically, it's recycling the BABS concept with a new name, AFFs. And it doesn't seem likely to pass. There's a subsidy which was originally 35% of interest over the life of the bond. And then it was, under the latest proposal, it'll be reduced to 28%.
Wow.
And so you're talking about putting on the federal budget a significant amount of local government, you know, debt service, and therein lies some of the resistance. And the administration maintains that, well, they would get the money back because they would be able to tax those taxable securities. However, if a lot of that's going abroad or if it's going into IRAs and pension funds, you know, the exact amount of how much they recoup is actually been part of the debate.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both so much. Jason Voss, CFA Institute, Kurt Van Kohler, Mitsubishi UFJ. This is Inside Investing. Thank you.